Right, good morning, everyone. I'm going to test your memory a little bit this morning. And it's a week as well, so if you're not like me, you probably won't remember, but I'm sure some people will remember. Last week I talked about times and seasons. I particularly wanted to speak about it that week, but during the sermon I mentioned a verse from another book. And I said that next week I was going to talk about that particular thing. Can anybody remember what it were? Well done, Julie's remembered it. Yeah, I said I was going to preach on Psalm 139 this week, and I am. I can't say it's exactly one of my favourite psalms. There's some which I like better than this. But I do like to preach from this. I've preached from this before, here and in other places. I just felt that I wanted to preach on it again this week, so I've been thinking about it for more than a week, like I usually do for a couple of weeks, and we're going to have a look at Psalm 139. I'd like us to read it all, so if you don't mind, can we just read round Psalm 139? So if you've got your Bibles, just read a couple of verses. If you shout it out quite loud, the mic will pick it up. So anybody wants to start?
You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You'll perceive my thoughts from afar. You'll discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways.
Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in, behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain.
Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast.
If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light will be night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day. The darkness is as well.
Thou hast possessed my rage. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvellous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth rightly.
Thy frame was not hidden from me when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my many unformed body. All the days ordained and for me were written in your book before one of them came to be.
How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you.
If only you, O God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you?
I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
Amen. When I thought about this chapter and how well God knows us, which is obvious from this, does he actually know us better than we know ourselves? When I think about situations in life, what we encounter, and even in everyday life, the normal things of life, how well do we know ourselves? How well are we certain of what we would do in any given situation? Could you be sure and certain of your reaction and that it would be in a Christian manner, you know, if somebody upset you, in response to shock or in response to insult or something like that. That's a personal thing, isn't it? Some people have got quicker tempers than other people. Some people never get mad, do they? Some people very easily get mad. I'm not sure that I could predict my behaviour in all situations, but mostly I think I would be all right. Obviously some situations do enrage us or make us mad. I particularly can't stand what people that I think are bad drivers. That's just me. And the horn on my car never gathers dust, you might say. But there might be things where you can think of where you think, oh, I hate that. You know, and if it happens, you think, before you've thought about it, you've said something. I'm not saying you swear or anything like that. I'm just saying you think something, you might, what an idiot that person is, or, you know, something along them lines. But it's amazing that God already knew that you were going to think that. God knew it before we did. When you think about the implications, it's quite scary and thought-provoking, isn't it, that God knows what we think and do before us. Let me just read you verse 4 this is the New King James Version. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. So in no uncertain terms that God knows everything about you and me, even more than we know about ourselves, even knows our thoughts are far off, you know, before we even think them, and that's quite scary. Just going to read you verse 1-4 from this New King James Version. O Lord, you have searched me and know me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thoughts afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. There is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. First scary thing in this chapter starts in verse 1, that God has searched me and knows me. So, not just give us a little scan or, you know, just thought about us for a minute or so. He's actually searched us. He's looked into every nook and cranny of our lives, every nook and cranny of our personalities, throughout our bodies, and knows everything that there is to know about us, more than we could ever know. Nothing is hidden from him. No thought, no deed, and no word that we have ever uttered that God didn't know about already. The things that I don't mind God knowing is, he knows all the good stuff, doesn't he? He knows when we've had a good day and when we've done something really good and nobody's seeing it, but we think, yeah, God's seeing that. I've done well there. He knows all our hopes and dreams in our, you know, in our worldly lives, in our Christian lives as well. He knows it all, doesn't he? He knows our passions. He knows our love. He knows our visions, the things that we'd like to do for him, the things that we'd like to do in our own worldly lives. We don't mind him knowing them bits, do we? But he also knows all the bad bits just as well as he knows all the good bits. He knows the things that only you know in your life. Maybe even your partners or your friends or your family don't even know some things about your life. But he knows those things as well. The things that we've said and done sometimes, probably when we might have been on his own or just with other people that are not Christians, and we think, man, I wish I'd not said that. I'm not right proud of that, but luckily nobody were watching and nobody were listening, but they were, weren't they? Isn't that a quite scary thought that God is there every second, but not only listening, but he knew what you were going to say as well and what you were going to do? And that should shape the way we live, shouldn't it? I think if we dwell on Psalm 139 already every day of our lives, we'd be very careful what we said and did throughout the day, wouldn't we? Verse 2, it says he knows our sitting down and our getting up. In other words, he knows the physical things that we do daily. He knows the needs that we have every day, how we conduct our everyday lives, what we do when we go to work, and what we do when we're not at work, the way we do things. The most thought-provoking words in this chapter are probably the next 6 words from that verse where he says, you understand my thoughts afar off. So God knows our thought patterns. He knows the way we're even going to think about something before we even encounter it. God knows what you're thinking of and why before you've even thought of them yourself. He knows what you will do or say in any situation. He knows in advance. And we don't even know that, do we? We don't know what we're going to do. to be known by God better than we know ourselves is a very humbling and life-changing thought, isn't it? Verse 3 says, you comprehend my paths. You comprehend my path. The word used for comprehend here is better translated winnow, which you might have heard before, but you winnow my path. To winnow is like when the chaff is cut and the corn and the grain. Modern machinery these days blows air through it and it gets rid of all the husks and the dust and the muck off and leaves the corns clean. And to winnow something is, in old-fashioned days, you used to throw it up and down and let the wind get in it and let the wind blow through it and it blow all the rubbish off. So in other words, God removes the rubbish and blockages and pitfalls from our paths if we trust in him and in the judgment, his judgment, and in his guidance. Verse 4 says, there's not a word on your tongue, but behold, God knew it before you said it. There's no word that we have ever said or will ever say that God doesn't already know and understand why we said it. Not that it's right, the words are right, but he understands sometimes why we say the things we do. How does that one sentence affect our words as we truly comprehend the verse? In verse 5 to verse 12, it changes the theme a little bit. I'm not going to read it all again because we've read it all, but it starts talking about how God protects us, how God is. So he knows every single thought that we know. He knows every single word that we're going to say. He knows everything we're going to do. And as a result of that, he knows how to protect us better than anybody else. You know, he can protect us from danger seen and unseen in our physical and spiritual and practical worlds. Things that when we think about in our Christian lives with hindsight, we can see where God's protected us and we never even knew there was danger at times. It says in verse 5, you hedge me behind and before and you laid your hand upon me, but such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too high. I cannot attain it. David's talking about God's awesome protection of his children, and that's not only David, but it also applies to us as well, doesn't it? He goes before us, we sing that song, don't we? He guards us from behind, and he has his hands on us in all situations, so he's not just in front and behind, but he's got us like in a cocoon of his powerful hands. There's nothing that can surprise God, and he doesn't make mistakes. And as verse 6 says, we can't understand how or why, but we are God's treasure that he knows and protects and leads. And David says there that knowledge of what of God's love and God's care and God's knowledge of us is too wonderful for him to understand. It's blowing his mind as he tries to write down and think about what it actually means. Just going to read you verse 8 to verse 10. If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall uphold me. If you think about some of the places, what David were talking about then, he's stating some of the most extreme places that we could find ourselves in. Doesn't talk about places like Meadow Hall or in the street or wherever. He talks about the depths of the sea, you know, in the farthest places. If we go to hell itself, then God has still got his hand on us. For when we're in heaven, obviously God is going to have his hand on us, isn't it? And then he concludes that even in those places, he could not be out of God's reach or protection or spirit. If he was heaven or hell or in the depths of the sea or the farthest parts of the world, God is and would be there for him, and is exactly the same for us. Wherever we go and whatever we did, even in a spiritual world, God is going to be there with us. There's no place, whether earthly or spiritual, where God doesn't exist and rule and will be with us. And that should sort of inspire us with some confidence, shouldn't it, of what God is doing in our lives, even in the times we can't see. Verse 10 says, his hands not only lead us, but also uphold us. They support us. The word that I like for this one is, it underpins all that we are and do and need to be. And if you think about underpinning, when something is going to collapse, they put big bolts into the rocks, they build big concrete pillars around them to stop everything collapsing. That's what God does for us. He builds a structure beneath us that holds us and keeps us safe when we think things are starting to collapse. God underpins us. Verse 11 to 12, he says, If I say surely the darkness shall come upon me, even the light, the night shall be as light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day, and darkness as the light are both alike to you. In these two verses, I believe David is talking about dark physical, practical and spiritual situations. When things in our life seem dark and unclear, God illuminates them, doesn't he? God gives us guidance for our way and for our steps. And that may be by his word. He might just speak straight into our lives. It might be through his written word. It might be through a word of knowledge, through the Holy Spirit. No matter, God will always speak to us in the situations when he needs to. No matter how dark it seems, God can and does change the situation physically, practically or spiritually into clearness and light. May not be instantly, because sometimes we go into a dark room, we want the light to come on. My garage is terrible for this. I've got them, these starter lights in my garage, and I go in the garage and turn it on sometime at night and it don't come on. I'm standing there thinking, I wish my light would come on, and then all of a sudden it comes on. Sometimes God's like that. The second we ask for the guidance, we don't always get it, do we? Sometimes it takes a little bit of time for God to let us understand the way that he's leading us. From verse 13 to 16 are probably my favourite parts of this psalm. It says, you formed me, my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvellous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. And listen to this bit. And in your book they are all written, the days fashioned for me when as yet there was none of them. And if you remember, I mentioned that verse a little bit last week. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it this week, because that's one of my favourite verses in this psalm. First of all, the first couple of verses talks about how God has formed us physically in our mother's womb and made us what and who we are now. It's that start that has made us into the person that we are. Yeah, we get input from other people, but initially the seed was there, wasn't it? The brain was there. How we would be was developed from that little start. I want to mention just two words which explain the theme of these four verses. And in verse 13, in this version, it says, you have covered me in my mother's womb. And that word there, covers, is probably better interpreted interwoven. You know, so all our bones make our skeleton up, and then God interwove all the veins and the, you know, the muscles and the sinews and everything. And then he put the lifeblood into us, you know, and then he put a spirit in us. And it's all interwoven together beautifully to make the person that we are. Bones, sinews, veins, body parts, all put together to function as our body. In verse 15, in my version, it says, our frame was skillfully wrought, or a better translation there is embroidered in an intricate pattern. God put us together in an intricate way that only he could have done. There's no one else, even now in our world, with all the technology that they have, there's no one else that can make a finger, you know, do what a finger does. They could make something out of mechanics which will bend. They can even computer control it and say, like to that finger, do so and so, do this, do that, the other. But that mechanical finger can't feel, you know, it can't do anything like that. But God put our whole bodies together in an intricate way that only he could do. Verse 16 for me is one of the best verses in any psalm. It tells us that God saw us, what we were and what we would become before he even made us, in that intricate pattern that he had for our lives and for our bodies. It says that all the days of our existence, not only on earth but also heaven, are written in God's book. And how does that make you feel? Does it make you feel special and chosen and blessed? In verse 16 it says, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they are all written. The days fashioned for me when as yet there were none of them. So that says even before we were made, before we were the tiniest thing that we could ever be, God had got a book on his shelf in heaven, and it says, wherever Dave Wood or Eileen, you know. And when I think about this, if you just think about Esther for a moment, coming up for two, if you two had to write every single thing that had happened to her of every minute of her day that she's lived so far, how big would the book be? And Esther's not two yet.
85 years worth.
So can you imagine if God had to write that? Well, he has. I'm not saying there's a physical book made of paper, but this was the only way that David could interpret what he was thinking about, that God had brought his life to such detail. You know, if you'd imagine the book of your life, you know, what had happened to you up to the age that you are now, and you had to write down what had happened every single minute, just one person's life would fill this room. You know, the book would be immense. And yet it says there that, and in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me before there were even any of them. God has wrote that book on us, and every single detail, everything is there. Nothing has been left out. In verse 17 to 18, David tries to say how it makes him feel, and he obviously runs out of words. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. The way that I interpret this was, if you had to think about writing that book, what, like, say Eileen, for instance, if you got to write the book of Eileen's life, how much thinking and thought pattern would it take to plan out Eileen's life if you were God? If it was us, we couldn't do it, could we? But God, in his vastness, has thought about every single minute, and David's mind is blown when he thinks about how much thought must have gone into the preparing of David's life by God. You know, when you think about it for our lives, doesn't it blow your mind how much thought God puts into your life? He's not just a distant person that interferes here and there and makes us annoyed or, you know, really cheerful or happy in what he does. He's thought about everything that's going to happen in our lives. He's got it in a book. He's got a process. He's got a plan. He's got a plan that we're following. And he's more numerous and elaborate than we could ever think or dream or even imagine. How many thoughts that must be. And David says, could he count them? There would be more numerous than sand if he tried. And we could never count God's thoughts for us exactly the same. In verse 19 to 22, don't really like these verses, but David is venting his anger and dislike of anyone and anything that is contrary to God's presence or will. He even uses the word, he hates wickedness and violence and evil. And we should as well, shouldn't we? We should hate those things. There are some things which can be hated, not our brothers and sisters or people, but the deeds and the things and the actions and the spirit and the powers behind them, things that are contrary to God. We can hate those things. Those things aren't part of God and his kingdom. In verse 22 he says he hates them with a perfect hatred, or a justified hatred, I like to think sometimes, of evil and violent people and violent deeds. David counts these things as enemies and contrary to God's will and kingdom. The last two verses that this psalm finishes with are probably some of the most challenging words that you'll ever speak to God and you'll ever read from the Bible. It finishes with two awesome and life-changing statements or questions to God, which we also need to say to God at regular times in our lives. And the first one is, search me, O God, and know my heart, and try me and know my anxieties. Search me and know my heart. The second thing is, see if there is any wickedness in me. I don't think we like to think there's any wickedness in us, do we? As Christians, we don't like to think that, but what is wickedness? Search me, O God, and know my heart. If we ask God to do this, we've got to be ready for the verdict and the answers that is going to come back. And it's dangerous to ask God questions, because you're going to get an answer to it, and it might not be the one that you want. Not only have we got to be ready for the answer, but we also have to be willing to do something about it, don't we? And believe me, I'm as bad as anybody else or worse than anybody else at this. We ask God for, Lord, what's happening here? What we're going to do there? How are we going to do this? Lord, help me. And he gives you the answer. You think, we should not bother asking, to be honest. It happens, doesn't it? When we ask God to search us and know us and then give us an answer to the things that are happening in our lives, we're not always happy with what he gives us. But we have to be willing to do something about it. If we truly know that God has said it, then we have to act upon it, don't we? And it may be life-changing and challenging and something that is really hard to do. But we have to do it, don't we? Second part, see if there is any wickedness in me. Wickedness is really anything that doesn't line up or something that is in contrary to God's will in our lives. And sometimes that's not always bad things, what we would think are bad things. It could be just something that is taking priority from God's will in our lives, something that's distracting us from God's will in our lives. And God's Holy Spirit may put his finger on things that we don't expect if we ask this question. To conclude this morning, God knows everything about us. Even before we were born, he knows our bodies, he knows our lives, he knows what's going to happen in the future. He knows our thought patterns, he knows our words, he knows the good stuff and he knows the bad stuff, and he's even wrote a book about it all in a spiritual way. Not that God would need a book to help him remember it. Just one thought to finish with, that if God knows us exactly as we are and he knows everyone in the world, if he's wrote a book on everyone, he doesn't specifically say that that's just Christians, then why did God make some of the people that he made? And sometimes maybe in your life you think, well, why did God even make me? You know, when we fail and do things wrong, or we're not happy with how our life lines up with what God is sort of showing us. But God still made us, you know. He knows every single thing that we're ever going to do or say or think or be or achieve, and he made us. That tells you something about God, doesn't it? There is a very forgiving God, isn't it? A very loving God. He's just like a parent that he accepts the good and the bad things that his children do. He's made us a plan and thought about every single minute and second of our day and our existence right into eternity. He doesn't stop when we get in eternity. God thinks about and loves you so much. He's in everything we ever are or can be. In every place we will ever go and in everything we will ever do or accomplish, God has been part of that. And the root has come from him, the seed has come from him. That should make us feel extremely, first of all, humble that God has put so much thought into our lives. It should make us feel thankful, shouldn't it, for the things that he does in our lives. It should make us feel blessed and special and chosen. That the awesome God and creator, the one that controls every single little thing, has planned out every second of your life. He wants to plan it out. He wants to be involved in everything that we are and do and have and will ever be. Amen.